Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Cup of Arslings, the Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I am Alyssa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in Season 3, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. Jessica, what's up?
Alyssa, it's been so long!
I know!
God, we have so much to talk about. This episode is crazy.
A lot happens.
We should start off because we've realized we've been in such a Last Kingdom bubble. Like, we've been watching these episodes and then rehashing them, that I think we've both kind of, like, not addressed some things that have been happening in, like, the entertainment world. Just because we've been so, like, we've been little hermits and we haven't been on Twitter. And, yeah, it's been a lot. So
all we do is hang out in Wessex. That's, like, our lives right now.
That's all we do. That's really all we care about. And that's fine. But we should talk about this Marvel kind of discussion and Martin Scorsese and his comments about Marvel and how it's kind of snowballed into this whole thing where a bunch of prominent directors have kind of, you know, said some not so nice things about these superhero movies and what they're doing to the age of cinema. So I think if you don't care about this, just skip on forward. But I think it's interesting because we are living in such a, it's such a crazy time for content. Like, there's so many shows, so many movies. It's so good. Like, it's great. But it does, you know, it's, this is a business at the end of the day, I think. And, you know, some of these movies perform much better than others. And if a movie performs well, you're going to make more of that movie and less of the movies that don't. And I think that's what Scorsese said, like, at the heart of his kind of issue with Marvel and these superhero movies is that it's great, you know, kind of, he calls it audiovisual entertainment. It's not cinema. And I could see, I see that argument. Like, I see where he's coming from.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those situations, like, if anybody is allowed to have an opinion on cinema, it's Martin Scorsese. Like, he's done so much for the industry, and he's done so much for the development of film. Like, his movies aren't necessarily for me, but because it's, you know, I'm not super into the mobster thing, and there aren't a lot of women in it. So I'm not saying he's above reproach, but I am saying that, you know, his movies have had such an important impact on cinema. Like, if anybody gets to define it, then it's probably him. And I definitely, like, I know a lot of people were asked about it and a lot of people had a lot of opinions about it. I definitely, Scorsese's was more interesting to me than, like, Francis Ford Coppola, who, again, another great director. But I don't know, ever since Coppola kind of came out and supported Victor Salva, who's a director who was a pedophile, like an actual pedophile, was, you know, prosecuted bad man, and he still continued to support him. I kind of didn't care anymore. Like, I don't care how good The Godfather is. If you're, you know, if you support a pedophile, I'm pretty much done with you. But with Martin Scorsese, like, I think it really, I don't know, it really became a huge deal, and they kind of, I don't know, the entertainment journalism industry, it kind of sort of started, it became like a snake eating its own tail. Like, of course they're going to ask somebody new, and of course they're going to have an opinion. And it just was this whole, I don't know, this whirlwind of opinions, and it got really exhausting. And it was to the point where it was just like, please don't ask any more people about whether or not they care about Marvel movies. But I think, you know, here's where I land on it. Like, I am a Marvel movie fan. I'm, you know, I'm, like, deep in the MCU. I love it. I will always love it. But I think there's room for criticism. I'm not one of those people where if I love something, I refuse to hear anything against it. That's just not how I roll. I think the idea that they're all bad is stupid. Like, if they're like any other kind of movie, I think it was James Gunn who mentioned this. Like, yes, there are good MCU films and bad MCU films. Just like there are good mobster movies and bad mobster movies, any kind of genre will have varying degrees of quality. And I think to just write off one genre completely is narrow-minded, I think. But again, like, get over it? I don't know. Like, the superhero nerds have taken this so personally, and they've, like, felt like they need to, like, rush to Marvel's defense. And I'm like, they really don't need you.
Marvel's good, yo.
Marvel's fine. They're gonna be okay.
Martin Scorsese is not gonna take down the Marvel Empire with his words.
Right. But they act like, you know, Martin Scorsese was the one who, you know, killed Tony Stark himself. Spoiler alert for Endgame. Sorry.
Martin Scorsese is Thanos.
Right.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, and you know what? I look at some, I completely get, you know, there are some Marvel movies, as much as I love Infinity War, Endgame, that's just entertainment. You know what I mean? I think there are some Marvel movies, like when I look at like Winter Soldier.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's real cinema to me.
It's so good.
That's stylized, and that pulls from, you know, inspiration from past movies and from noir crime, you know, movies of the past. That it's like,
it's a spy movie, and it's a great one. Whether, like, even if you take out the superhero factor of it, like, it's a great spy movie.
Right, and I think about, you know, Logan.
So good.
I think James Mangold did that. Logan.
Yeah.
Was just such a great movie. Again, it's in the superhero world. I wouldn't necessarily classify it like just superhero, but I think there are exceptions. And like you said, we shouldn't paint it with a broad brush. And I think the other side of that is talking about how, you know, a lot of people took that as, oh, well, superhero movies are destroying cinema. Mm. But if you think about cinema the way, you know, Martin Scorsese probably does, a lot of those movies are made by the Martin Scorsese's of the world. You mm-hmm. know, like, they have the privilege of making those movies. Not everyone does. And I think a lot of times you see people who make these, you know, small, like, indie films that are very, you know, cinematic, and their reward is to make, like, a blockbuster, you know, superhero movie. You think of, like, Ryan Coogler or Ava mm-hmm. DuVernay, or so it's like, I don't think that it's just one or the other. I think there's a balance, there's a middle, and you can like them, you don't have to like them. Let's not lose our shit if people don't like them. Like, it's cool. They're going to be fine.
Well, that's
cinema's going to be fine.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you have like a Taika Waititi who went from A Hunt for the Wilder People, which was a great little indie, to Thor Ragnarok, to Jojo Rabbit, which is another small indie film. And it's just, I don't know. I don't think that it's so cut and dry that you either have to love Marvel or you have to love quote unquote cinema. I think there's room for both. And I think people should take everything a little bit less personally, you know, like on both sides of the aisle. Like, you know, yes, like movies are important, like whatever, but also you're not curing cancer. Like, it's a movie and it's beautiful and it's art and whatever, but like, let's not get too self-important about what we're doing here. And then, like I said, with the, you know, the superhero nerds, like, just because somebody doesn't like your favorite superhero, like, it's fine, they'll be fine, you'll be fine,
you need to calm down.
Right.
T-Swift said,
listen to Taylor, you need to calm down.
Like what you like, and let other people like what they like, and let's just all live like in fucking harmony. Whatever.
Right. There you go. There are so many things to worry about and be angry about that, I mean, whether or not Martin Scorsese is a fan of Captain America, it really doesn't make a blip on the radar of importance, you know, like, just.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Let's harness that energy and like put it towards like climate change or something. I don't know.
No, Martin Scorsese and his glasses need to hear my anger. Like, oh God.
We have to take him down first.
Right.
Yeah, no. Speaking of living in harmony, let's go to the Last Kingdom, because things are not harmonious in Wessex.
Not at all.
It's getting rough, like, the tensions are ramping up, and poor Uhtred is just stuck in the middle of it all.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I used to think that, you know, the biggest thing that the Saxons had going for them was the fact that they were all united under Alfred, and the Danes could never agree on who was going to be king, so there was so much infighting. But this season really shows that on the Saxon side, without Alfred, they are just as backstabbing as the Danes. And yeah, Uhtred is stuck in the middle of these really disintegrating factions, and it is a mess.
It's a damn mess. So we kind of pick up things. Uhtred's living amongst the Danes. He's 100% good to go. He's got over his flu, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, practicing his sword skills. Leofric is still, like, you know, haunting around him. In hallucination form. So he might just be going crazy. I mean, I thought maybe it was the fever, but he could be losing his mind. We don't know.
The guilt is eating at him, I think, like leaving behind Alfred, even though, like, you know, he hates Alfred for what he's done, like, he still swore an oath to him and he still served him for over a decade now. So that's a hard bond to break, even when you're angry and feel as betrayed as Uhtred does.
Yeah. So he's stuck in Dunholm, and, you know, we're playing party games and getting white girl wasted. It's all such a good time.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, we party one night and then we talk about, you know, marching on Wessex the next. So it's mm-hmm. kind of, it's a bit of a, like, a roller coaster, I think, for Uhtred, like, emotionally, to be like, I'm totally chill and, like, relaxing with my family. And then the next one, it's like, oh, let's talk about, like, killing this dude that I've served for 15 years. It's pretty difficult.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, before we kind of get into that and what happens in Dunholm, we should probably talk about our sweet Ethelfled and what she's going through.
I'm so proud of her. Like, she is doing so well. She's killing it as a lady. She's living apart from her shitty husband. Like, she's a mom. She's a businesswoman. She's a leader. And her people love her. She is right. I don't know how she does it, because she is crushing it on all fronts. And I respect that.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, talking about respect, Edhelm, who is, as Ethelfled, like, correctly describes him, you know, he's Ethelred's hound. He visits Ethelfled at her Mercian estate. He kind of creeps in the night so no one will see him. And you almost get the feeling like, oh, like, is
he's
this
there
dude,
to kill her.
He's going to kill her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But turns out he really respects Ethelfled. He sees her value for Mercia as a whole. He knows everyone respects her. His king is not turning out to be the king he wanted him to be. And he knows that killing Ethelfled in the end is just going to cause more unrest and disarray for Mercia.
I'm here because I'm every breath of Mercian. Because I've come to believe that we would be a poorer land without the Lady of Mercia.
He warns Ethelfled of Ethelred's plan to, you know, have her attacked by rogues or whatever and just killed. Mm-hmm. And suggests that she leaves her estate, which, like, why the fuck does she have to leave her home?
I know.
It pisses me off.
I know, but yeah.
But Ethelred, it's for her safety.
It is. And Ethelred is, you know, not going to play fair. Like, he's so bitter against her and against whoever's child that is, like, whether it's his or whether it's Eric's. I like to think that it's Eric.
It's Eric.
She's
Eric's.
Come on. Look at that blonde head. She's so cute. It sucks that they have to leave, but at least, you know, she's got people around her who give a shit, you know, like, she's inspired that kind of loyalty. Like, her men are willing to go wherever with her without question. She's got her, like, lady in waiting, Sybil, or I'm not sure what role she plays, but she's kind of like Athelflaed's right hand. And so she's going to find Bayaka and bring him some letters to be like, hey, we need Uhtred because shit's getting real. And he's the only one that Athelflaed trusts at this point.
Right. And so she heads off to a nunnery. She's got a good cover because, you know, she says she's going to this nunnery and everyone's like, oh, is it to pray for your sixth father? And she's like, yes,
yeah, definitely.
Yes,
that.
Yeah. So she heads off and Ethelred kind of discovers this. He has a man that goes in and checks and he's like, yeah, no one's there, bro. He gets pissed, stabs the guy without finding out where she went. And Edhelm has the best line of the episode, which
it's
is
a good burn.
This is the ninth century. You can't just kill people.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, man. That was one of those lines. It felt a little modern, but I also really appreciated it.
I loved it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there's too modern, you know, when we talk about Skade and how she looks, but then there's just modern enough where you're like, dude,
that's a great burn.
Century. Don't kill people. So he's Ethelred's, you know, plan to get rid of Ethelfled kind of hits a snag. Mm-hmm. And he tells Edhelm, you know, go find some Danes. Any fucking Danes will do. But I want her dead. Find out where she is. Sick them on her. Like, that's going to be the end of that. So Uhtred's involvement is more important than ever. And then we visit Beoka in Wessex.
Yeah, Alfred is really disintegrating. Like, his health is bad. His mental health is bad. Like, without Uhtred, he kind of feels a little bit unmoored, I think. And he's disappointed in his son, you know? Although his son is really just doing what Alfred did for so much of his life. You know, he spent so much time, you know, chasing tail and doing whatever he wanted to do. And Edward, at least, is committed to one girl. You know what I mean? But it's still seen as, you know, quote unquote, errant behavior. They're looking for a wife for Edward. Aelswyth is saying, you know, boys will be boys, whatever. But yeah, they're really focused on getting him a wife, but they're choosing the family, especially the father, and not the daughter. Like, he gives Beoka a list of names, and they're like, oh, and he's like, oh, you know, are these eligible ladies? He's like, I don't know if they have daughters, but if they do, they're on the list. So
they could have the pox for all they care. As long as their dad has like 1,000 men and lots of silver, they're good to go.
Right.
But apparently that's not going to be good for Edward, because Edward is already married.
Already married. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yikes on bikes. He talks about his like sweet, gentle wife, and nobody really believes him that they're actually married. They think he's playing a joke, and he's like, no, go find the priest. You know, they'll find out that, yes, I am indeed married to this woman. And, you know, it's just, it's a mess. Like, he doesn't want to be king. He doesn't want to be the Atheling. And Alfred's super pissed at him. But honestly, I'm like, I get it. Like, it sucks to be a woman back then. But like, why doesn't he just make Ethelfled his heir? Because she's killing it. She could definitely kill it on a larger scale. Like, get over it. You know, leave your boring son behind and give the power to Ethelfled.
At this point, that seems like the easiest option for Alfred, because Edward is still so young and so green.
Yeah,
He hasn't earned anything for himself. And Ethelfled is the complete opposite. I mean, she's got a ton of respect and a ton of loyalty from all kinds of people in Mercia and in Wessex.
Yeah.
She could really unite those two kingdoms. So it is like it's a bit of a head scratcher, you know, other than the whole like sexist, like women can't rule thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why Alfred would pick Edward over Ethelfled. But that's the way it is. And so he sends Edward to a monastery to pray things out.
Pray away his insolence.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe by the time he like emerges from the monastery, he won't be married or have babies anymore. Who knows? Mm. And it's all kind of going to hell for Alfred at this point. And so then we jump back to Dunholm, where things are going marginally better for the Danes.
Sort of. Yeah, they're like having, it reminded me of like field day in elementary school where you'd like play all the games outside and
less ale.
Right. Less ale. But it had that like field day vibe. And Ragnar's such a ham. Like,
oh,
he's the
God.
MC of
Loving
the games.
It.
He's having the time of his life. Uhtred is there. Brita is there. His family is united again. And he is like, he's feeling it. And he's so stoked. And I liked the different insults that they came up with. Like, I didn't know that frog liquor would be such a, you know, burn, but I guess that's a thing.
Osford takes real offense to it.
We do not lick frogs. I'm like, all right, is this like a thing? Like, does it have to do with like, you know, frogs are associated with witches or I don't know. It was so odd, but I didn't hate it.
Yeah, I mean, the pig humping and the ugly, you know, calling them, you know, ugly, that didn't seem to bother anyone. It was the frog licking that really got to them. But yeah, I was totally rooting for Golden Haired Boys of Denmark. It's it's the new boy band name, I call it. so we get to see the Vikings have some fun in games. Ragnar is like such a trickster. I just love it. He's so in his element.
Mm-hmm.
And then Heston and Bloodhair pull up and they ruin the fun, right. You know, proving that party crashing, even in medieval times, just isn't cool.
It's a party foul. Yeah. So, yeah, Ragnar has to stick his head in the bucket and quick sober up.
We've all been there, buddy.
Who hasn't had to rally? But yeah, so Heston and Bloodhair show up and they're like, hey, let's take out Alfred together. And they're like mad that Uhtred is there, and Bloodhair is mad that he still has Skade. And there's so much division amongst the Danes. Like, there's so much pride and they're all so petty. Like, I love a few of them, but they're all so petty. But yeah, they think that they're going to be able to, you know, unite against a common enemy in Alfred and take him out while he's weak.
It's a real blow, I think. You know, we see Heston and Bloodhair together, like, not a big surprise. And then we see Ethelwald, like, riding in behind him. And he and Uhtred have this little back and forth. And oof, it is difficult because, you know, Ethelwald basically is saying, like, bro, we're the same. Like, yeah, we both got usurped by our uncles. We've broken our oaths. We're going against Wessex, but for the good of Wessex, or what we think is the good of Wessex.
Mm.
A lot of what he's saying does make sense, but Uhtred does not want to hear that he is just like Ethelwald. Like, that's the biggest burn of all.
Sure. Like, I think in a way Ethelwald is correct, but I think that Uhtred may be thinking for the good of Wessex, but I don't think that Athelwald is. Mm-hmm. Like, Athelwald is for the good of Athelwald. And I think that's the key difference between him and Uhtred. But like you said, he's not incorrect. Like, Uhtred did break his oath and leave. And there's so much conflict within Uhtred in this episode. And, like, in a way, it's kind of frustrating because it feels like we're back in season one where he's like, am I a Saxon or am I a Dane? And I feel like he's kind of left that behind and he's been more resolute. And so I understand, like, life threw him some curveballs. Shit is really hard. But at the same time, like, come on, man. Like, you can't keep feeling this way. Like, you have to pick a side.
You've got to, at this point in your life, you've got
to shit or get off the pot. You have to make choose one of them because
you've
got to
know yourself better than that. Yeah. You just can't. And so, you know, we kind of head back to Wessex and we see that Ethelflaed's servant, she brings Beoka the letters,
mm-hmm.
basically saying, this is what's happening. Don't tell my dad. Like, alliances are everything. And then she gives him another letter that says, but I have a solution. And of course, the solution is Uhtred.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tira and Beoka get up on the river. They sail for Dunholm.
Oh, before that, though, we need to talk about Alfred deciding to go after Uhtred's children.
Oh my God, what a dick move.
Like, that is just kind of a sign that Alfred is beyond the pale at this point, that he would be so willing to go after children, you know? And he does it in such a way, like, he's not just going to go kill him. He's going to do it in a way that would almost hurt Uhtred more by bringing them to Winchester and converting them and turning them into good little Saxon Christians.
Yeah, to have them, like, completely under his thumb, which is mm-hmm. what Uhtred, like, wanted to get out of.
Exactly.
Like, it's just so calculated and manipulative.
Classic Alfred.
Ugh. And apparently that's what he was praying about.
Right.
Bioka's like, dude, do you need me anymore? And he's like, yeah, by the way, God told me. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
So Bioka's just, I mean, I think he's seeing, like, the bad side of Alfred. He's seeing the bad
he
side
knows
of Uhtred.
This is,
he's
he
caught
knows
in the middle, too.
He knows it's a shitty move. He knows that. But he is all in on Alfred and always will be, so.
He decides to kind of respect Ethelflaed's wishes. They mm-hmm. they head up north. They survive what Beoka thinks is a storm, but
Tira like,
tells him,
this is nothing, you weakling. I love it.
You poor weak little man. and so they head up north to let Uhtred know what's going on. And Uhtred is, you know, I think we haven't seen a lot of Skade in the past couple episodes. She's been kind of locked away, and that's been a good thing. But he mm-hmm. has a moment with her this episode, especially since Bloodhair has come. Like, it was time for them to have another moment together. And it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Anytime they're together, I just cringe.
Yeah, it's... You know, I feel like this show does a really, really good job of, like, building chemistry between characters, whether it's romantic or whatever. Like, they do a great job of, you know, building tension, but I don't believe it with Skaid and Uhtred. Like, I can tell that this is supposed to be a moment that's like, you know, thick with sexual tension, but I just, it doesn't work for me.
Uhtred still seems very put off by her.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how pretty she is, like, he's still very put off by her and her curse. And right. She is very, it's not like she's like, oh, I'm obsessed with you, I'm in love with you. It's like, I know that you're going to be powerful, you're going to be a king one day, and I want to be your queen. Mm-hmm. Like, I admire the hustle, Skaid, but it's a little too much. And so, you know, they're kind of having their moment.
Blood hair comes
chained
in.
Up.
Right.
Blood hair comes in, like, yo, that's my woman. Like, how do we figure this out? And Uhtred is a bit of a shit. Again, reverting back to his old ways.
Right.
And, like, makes out with Skaid right in front of Blood hair to kind of goad him on.
Sure. I kind of liked it when Blood hair said she was not a woman to own, though. I was like, oh right. Yeah. Male ally.
See,
for
knows.
2 seconds.
But see, I saw it more as like a warning of like, look, like, she's mine because I have given like part of myself to her.
Sure.
If you're serious about her, you're going to have to do that too. Like, it's more than just like, oh, you're going to hook up with this girl. Like, she's there's, you know, some serious dark magic about her.
Yeah.
And I haven't sacrificed like half of myself just to like let you take it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think he recognizes
her
as
power.
Obsessed. Yeah, yeah, as obsessed as he is with her, he recognizes her power over him still.
And that she's dangerous. I think if anybody knows what Skaid is capable of and what she wants to accomplish, it's Blood hair. And like, yeah, he's all in on her and will follow her anywhere and try to get her back. But also he knows that like she's not somebody to be trifled with.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens when you drink someone's blood. Like, that's right. Kind of like
there's a weird bond there that will linger. But yeah, you know, they have that moment, and then, you know, the Danes are all convening together, and Uhtred basically tells them, you know, you guys need to unite under one leader. Like, you can't have these different warring factions, or you're never going to accomplish anything. And he tells them rightly that Ragnar is the one who needs to lead them because Ragnar is the only one that they all trust.
And I tell you now, I would be proud to lead the next great army, but only if it is agreed by each one of you.
Yeah, and that's very true. I mean, there's no way that Heston or even Bloodhair was going to, like, unite these tribes.
Definitely not.
I think, like, it would have felt like more of like an important decision for me if like we didn't focus so much on Uhtred and his kind of point of view of it all, because
yeah.
It is a big deal for the Vikings to kind of all band together under one leader. That's huge.
Like,
that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But I think if we're looking at it from Uhtred's point of view, even though this happens, you get the feeling that he's just kind of over it. Like, he's done with it. Like, he knows that once the raiding and pillaging is over, the greed is going to set in. They're going to turn on each other. It's not this whole, like, oh, we're all one. It's not going to last.
Yeah.
And I think Uhtred has been with Alfred a little too long to truly be a Dane again. Because
sure.
The whole Dane way of life is we're going to take what we want and that's it. And
yeah.
It's like kind of like destroy, destroy, destroy. And Uhtred has spent the last 15 years helping Alfred build something. And
right.
So to see that all, you know, possibly destroyed, I think is a little bit more than he's like prepared to face, and to know it's going to be destroyed. And then, you know, the infighting's going to start and it's just going to be more war. Like, that's
sure.
All that's in that future.
Yeah. Like, you know, Uhtred, he pledges his sword to Ragnar, but he certainly doesn't seem happy about it because, you know, he has his issues with Alfred, but like, he's reaped the benefits of a stable England. Like, he's had his land, he's had his family, he's had his friends, and he knows that, you know, building is better than tearing down, and there's never going to be building for the Danes. They just, like you said, they just want to destroy. It'll be war forever. And, you know, he's not really on board, but he doesn't really see another option for himself at this point. And, you know, you can tell that his men are really not on board. Like, Osferth is mad. Finnan, you know, shushes Osferth, but he's also mad. Sitric has a wife in Saxony, so, like, he doesn't, you know, want to go to war either. And, you know, it's just, it's a mess.
Yeah. And so that's what you know, while Alfred is putting on his chainmail and trying to rally the troops, that's what Bjelke and Tira kind of walk into. They see Heston on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So Bjelke's kind of clued in to, like, okay, he's not to be trusted anymore.
Yeah.
They get there. They see Athelwald's there, of course. And, you know, they're welcomed because obviously Ragnar is so happy to see Tira and to see that she's happy and well, like, adjusted. But the fact that Bjelke is there is kind of like a pause, because if anyone can sway Uhtred,
it's Bjelke.
You know, other than Hild,
right,
it's Bjelke.
Yeah.
She asked for your help, not because you are her oath man, Uhtred, but because you are the man that she trusts the most.
There's a lot of secrecy going on because Bjelke is like, oh, well, we're just here to tell Uhtred that Alfred banished him, even though this is something that he already knows. Bjelke and Uhtred, they have a little chat, and he tells them about Athelflaed's situation. And initially Uhtred is like, I'm out. Like, this is not what I want to do. This does not serve me anymore. And I'm done. And Bjelke, you know, he tells him about what Athelwald has been doing and how he is involved in Æthelred wanting to kill Athelflaed. I feel like I just crammed a lot of Athels into one Athels sentence. I think I got them all right, though. Basically tells him, you know, Athelflaed releases you from your oath, which has been such a sticking point for Uhtred. But she wants you to help her as a friend because you're the only one that she still trusts.
Ugh, what a gut punch. It's like that thing when your parents are like, we're not mad at you.
Just disappointed.
We're just disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it was like for me watching that. Because it's like, you are not sworn to me anymore, but I still consider you my friend. Will you help me?
Right.
Like, come on.
Which is kind of exactly what Uhtred is looking for. Like, he's been so bitter about Alfred trapping him with the oath. And for Athelflaed to recognize that and release him from that oath and sort of hoping that he'll help her because of their relationship, like, that's exactly what Uhtred was looking for. And I think I think if she hadn't have handled it that way, I don't know if he would have been as willing to go and help her as he is.
I agree. Yeah, that whole conversation, which, by the way, can we just talk about how Bjelke, like, greets the Cookham crew?
And it's so good.
Calls Citric
the one that looks like a rat. Oh.
That looks like a rat.
I also really loved his reunion with Brita. Brita, my angel, I see you've swallowed another wasp. I was like, man, when he's on fire, Bjelke is on fire.
He is a sassy priest, and I like it.
Yeah.
So I think that doesn't help the conversation either, because once Bjelke leaves, you know, the Cookham crew, like, gets back together and they're
talking. I love them so much. I love them so much.
They're kind of talking around it because Uhtred's like, I don't want to hear it. And so Finan's like, well, then I would tell Citric that we shouldn't do this. And
because
I would
of
tell
his wife, and Osberth is upset and I'm upset, but, you know, I wouldn't say that. You know, and Uhtred is kind of offended that they would imply that he would abandon his brother, but he doesn't really have another choice at this point. As long as he has people that rely on him, he can't just abandon them to be a Dane. Like, if he was just himself and completely autonomous, then maybe. But he's got his family. He's got, you know, even though Alfred's taken away Cookham, like, he has his people there. He has his, you know, inner circle. And he's, like I said, like, he's making decisions for more than just himself.
Make no mistake, we have the same, you and I. Apparent traitors to Wessex, but for good cause.
Yeah, and so he kind of has a confrontation with, after all this happens, he has a confrontation with Æthelwald.
Oh, so good.
That really pisses him off, for good reason. There's a bond there between him and Æthelflaed, and he's made promises to her, and... You know, she's went to bat for him when it comes to her dad. Like, there's a friendship and a bond there. And I think even if he wasn't planning on going to help her at that point, to see someone just such a worm, you know, Æthelwald is such a worm, to see him plotting her murder is just a little too insulting. Like, it's too much, you know?
Yeah.
And so they have it out.
Can you imagine if you were, like, against Uhtred and he, like, growled at you, do not sleep tonight, you may not wake? How pants-shittingly terrifying would that be?
Dude, I mean, I honestly gained a bit of respect for Ethelwald because he
didn't drop dead out of fear.
Together. Yeah, he didn't piss himself. Like, he just kept, you know, goading him on, and everyone's there. Bloodhair's there. Ragnar's there. Breeda's there. They're all witnessing it and seeing how upset that Uhtred is getting every time Ethelwald says something about, you know, oh, are you sworn to the princess? Oh, are you going to leave us for her? Like, he knew, as dumb and, you know, just there for shits and giggles that Ethelwald is, he's smart. And
he knows the weak points to exploit in order to cause the most chaos.
Yeah, and it works. And it works really well, unfortunately. There's so much angst.
What my father gave to you, I now take back. You are no longer Uhtred Ragnarsson.
Ragnar, you cannot do that, please.
You are no longer my brother.
Breeda calls Uhtred, like, a whore to the crown of Alfred, which, ouch.
Yeah, it's bad. Like, he basically tells the Danes the truth. You know, he tells him, this army can never hold. Like, you're not going to be able to stay united. It's not going to work out. And Ragnar, like, he feels so betrayed because Uhtred is like, all right, I have to go. Like, I have to help her in Mercia. I will be leaving. I'm not going back to Wessex, but, like, I'm still leaving and I'm not going to be a Dane. And Ragnar is like, you know, do not do this to me again. And he basically cuts him off. You know, he banishes him and tells him, you know, you are no longer Uhtred Ragnarsson. You are no longer my brother. Which is devastating. Ugh.
Even Tira's like, don't do that.
It's awful.
It's just like a mess.
It's yeah. And like they've had their ups and downs, but they've always been able to sort of reach across that divide between Saxon and Dane and sort of cling to their brotherhood. And now that's done.
No, this felt like a rift that cannot be repaired.
Yeah, a huge one. And so before he goes, he's like, all right, I'm going to take Skade with me. And Bloodhair is like, the fuck you are. And so, you know, he calls them to make the square and fight for Skade. And that is the end of the episode.
Yeah, a fight to the death, which is not what Bloodhair originally propositioned. He said,
nope.
We can make the square and do it with staffs, and it'll be a fight of skill.
Right.
Whoever wins gets Skade.
Right.
But Ragnar, in his, you know, anger towards Uhtred, is like,
nope,
you're
this is a chance for him to die. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, oof.
Yeah.
We're in a rough spot.
It's a lot. And although I'm kind of like, maybe he just doesn't realize how powerful Uhtred has gotten at this point, but like, he's already defeated Bloodhair on the battlefield once. I don't know why he thinks that he won't defeat him in the square, too.
Yeah, bro, he killed Ubba, like,
right.
Seasons
right.
ago.
It's Uhtred, come on!
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, you want to go first?
Yeah, so I just want Uhtred to stick with the decision that he's made and do right by his men. Like, he's been so wishy-washy about whether or not he's a Saxon or a Dane, which, like, I get it. They've both done him wrong. They've both benefited him. It's a tough call. But I just want him to make up his mind. Like, this inability to choose has really, in this episode, it really felt like we were watching season one Uhtred again. Yeah. And I'm hoping that age and experience will sort of, you know, sort of help him stick to this choice. Like, his men are Saxon, their families are Saxon. It's time to make a final decision and stick with it, my guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, now that the bonds of brotherhood have been broken, we've survived the angst of it all. I'm going to say it. I'm ready for a little cathartic bloodshed.
Hell yeah. Like,
make the fucking square, chop off Bloodhair's head, and pale Ethelwald in his sleep. Like, I don't care which asshole dies as long as Uhtred gets to, like, do the killing and maybe get out some of his, like, aggression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. So The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets the time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. Jessica, who is your arsling in this episode?
So, I mean, honestly, none of the men impressed me this episode. I think they're all pretty, like, greedy, and they'll turn on each other in a second if it means more silver and glory.
Mm.
So I think I'm going to cast two votes
okay.
for the ladies. One for Ethelfled, who handled the news that her husband wanted her dead like a damn boss. She's, like, casually vacationing to a nunnery while keeping her father's alliance strong, asking Uhtred for help on the down low. Like, that's a real queen.
Yeah.
And a vote for Tira, because, you know, it's fun to see her kind of make fun of Beoka and cackle with glee at his
so good,
you know, fear of a tiny storm. And she comes to Dunholm, which is where she, you know, the worst of the worst has happened to her there. And she's still trying to, you know, speak truth to Ragnar and kind of reason with him and, like, make sure everything's okay. It's like, she's just come so far, and I'm so proud of her. So, yeah. Ladies, you're doing it for yourselves, and you're doing it for all of us this episode.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Like, these women are getting shit done because the men can't be bothered to make a decision. Like, I loved seeing Athelflaed so capably running her estate and sort of inspiring this love from her people. I loved seeing Tira facing a place where she was so traumatized with such bravery and such grace. Yeah, like you said, like, these are two women who have really faced extreme hardships and come out of the other side stronger than ever. And I have no option but to stand.
Get ready to shame them, the worst character of the episode, with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane, anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the episode. So, Alyssa, who, like, were you just hating on this episode? There has to be so many.
They're honestly, like, all of them? It just, like, yes. it really hurts me to say it, but I'm kind of going to go with Uhtred.
I feel it.
Like, this indecision is such a bad look on him, and I know he, like, gets it together by the end of the episode, but we just, like, we've been with him through so much that we know he's better than this. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, we've discussed at length how much season one Uhtred tends to suck, and his disregard for his men and their families is really disappointing, and I get that he's hurt by Alfred's betrayal, but he isn't making decisions just for himself. And so I'm glad he wises up and decides that forcing his men, you know, to ride against their friends and family is a bad idea. But God, it takes an extreme amount of angst to get there.
So true. I mean, so many turds this episode. Like, how do you choose? Like, Ethelwald, he goaded Uhtred into turning his back on Ragnar. Ragnar disowned his brother when he wouldn't fight for him. Uhtred waited until the last minute to switch sides again. Beoka teased poor Citric.
Citric is so sweet and quiet. Leave him alone.
and caused Uhtred to, like, doubt himself. And Alfred, who's kind of using Uhtred's kids against him, which is, like, that's probably the worst.
Yeah.
Then you've got Bloodhair, you've got Heston, you've got Ethelred out here killing dudes. Like, it's still the 8th fucking century. Like, just take your pick, man. All the men.
It was, yeah, nobody, no, not many, I don't think any of the men come out of this episode looking great, so.
Yeah.
Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2019, the world is on fire, and honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. Honestly, I feel like we could have skipped this segment,
Yeah, I mean, not much here, guys. Like, there's not much to thirst over this episode. There's tension between Skade and Uhtred. It's thick.
Mm.
But it does absolutely nothing for me. And if anything, like, I die a little inside each time, like, Skade propositions Uhtred just because it's so gross.
It's so awkward. And he's not into it. You know what I mean? Like, he's basically, like, he's always telling her, you could never replace my wife. And I'm like, Skade, no means no.
Yeah, honey, like, consent is everything. And if the dude you're, like, coming on to is, like, constantly mentioning his dead wife, maybe back up.
Right. Like, maybe.
Back off a bit.
Right.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I guess like watching the golden hair boys put on a show with their rope game was like semi sexy. And like Ragnar's peacocking is like, you know, it does it for me. But honestly, I think the show needs to bring us all like a tall glass of thirstat because things are starting to dry up and it ain't because of global warming. You feel me?
Yeah, like, listen, this is a show full of hot people, you know, like there's no denying this and it's apparent in every episode. But you're right. Like nothing particularly quenching in this episode, except the occasional feat of strength, which usually works for me and my lizard brain. So
look, it's almost insulting because the show does have so many hot people
right.
that you can't make us thirsty every episode. Like, you're doing something wrong.
Right. How dare you?
You've been given all the fucking gifts.
Right.
Like, use them.
Right.
All right, guys. I think it's safe to say we've never been accused of being unenthusiastic in our fandom. We annoy our friends, our family, and now you are devoted listeners. Welcome to Geek Out, where we will offer up our humble suggestions about what we think you should be watching and reading. So, Alyssa, what are you geeking out over this week?
Okay. Last night, I watched the pilot episode of Dickinson, which is the new Apple TV Plus show. And I just signed up for, like, the free week-long trial. And I think at this point, there's not enough to, like, make me keep going with that.
Oh, no.
But yeah, like I definitely really enjoy the pilot. It's kind of, you know, it's one of those things where I have to sort of unplug my, you know, dedication to like things being historically accurate because the language is very modern and the sensibility is very modern, but it's done in a way that's very engaging. Like I love Hailee Steinfeld. Like she's always so good. And I really liked the pilot episode. I'm definitely probably going to binge the rest of it over the course of the week. But yeah, it's definitely reminds me of kind of like a Knight's Tale take on history, which I love that movie.
Love
so
Knight's Tale.
I'm on board. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm geeking out over today. And I will definitely be seeing that one through. Are you going to sign up for Apple TV Plus? I feel like everybody's going to have to like make decisions over which streaming services get their money.
God, seriously. I'm probably not.
Yeah. I heard the morning show was really bad, which is insane because like you've got Jennifer Aniston, you've got Reese Witherspoon. Like, how do you waste that talent?
Steve Carell. Steve Carell. So much talent.
Yes.
Yeah, I just haven't heard good things about really any of the shows. I mean, Dickinson seemed the one that was most appealing to me only because I want to see Wiz Khalifa like play.
He's so good. He's so good. Yeah.
And I want to see like John Mulaney play Henry Thoreau.
Right.
Like
right.
It's these weird casting choices that like have really interested me, but there's nothing really there that's like super enticing. And then to see like the bad reviews for everything.
Yeah.
It just felt like, why?
You know, it's one of those things like I'll probably, you know, probably revisit it in the future because I know of a couple of things that they're making that sound really interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know they're doing an adaptation of Pachinko, which was a novel that I really loved. And I feel like as an epic show, it would be just like amazing. But yeah, I think when my week long trial is up, I'm just going to let it ride because like we've got Disney Plus coming and that's got a lot more going for it.
Yeah, so like I'm interested, there's a show that's coming out for Apple TV. It's probably gonna be next year, but it has Octavia Spencer and Aaron Paul in it about this podcast. And so it's like a true crime show, so it looks really good. So I feel like it's gonna be a thing where it's like
you dip
maybe
in
I
and
jump
out.
On for one show. Yeah, exactly. Until they really have a library that's like big enough to entice. Like I'm not gonna do it every month. And I think, like you said, Disney Disney's bringing those Disney Channel movies, yo. Like,
right.
Who can compete with that?
Right. So, yeah. It's
plus, also, like, Verizon, what's up? Like, I get a free, like, year of Disney Plus. So.
What? Oh,
yeah,
my God.
I'm just
going to
be enjoying the shit out of that.
You know, I was so mad. I got a new computer a month before I could qualify for free Apple TV. And I was like, really? Like, a month? You're going to begrudge me a month? But whatever. Yeah, a lot coming. So use your free week to watch Dickinson and then maybe let it lie for a while.
Yeah, use your time wisely, you guys. That's the whole lesson of this era of PTV.
Streaming war. You have only so many hours in a day.
Yeah, well, speaking of streaming, I'm geeking out over the show The End of the Fucking World Season 2.
Yeah.
It obviously had a season one. This first season was terrific. So
it was
good.
Very good.
Now, Jessica Barden's in it, who I love.
Yeah, she's great. You know, I haven't watched any of season two yet, and I want to know because I really loved the first season, but I also thought it ended really well. And I kind of hoped that it would stay a mini series. You know, does it justify that second season in your opinion?
Here's the thing. I don't think that they absolutely needed a second season.
Okay.
I get why they did it. I don't think it was needed.
Okay.
I am not upset that it's there. It's not like it ruins anything about the first season for me.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting premise because, the first season, if you guys watch it, it's basically like this Bonnie and Clyde, like dark humor kind of take on that. It's like these two kids on the run committing crimes, like trying to figure out life together. They're like two weirdos that don't fit in, you know. And it ends with like a cliffhanger. It's very dramatic. I think season two.
I feel like it's important to say that in the first season, they go on this road trip and he fully intends to murder her. Like, that's a pretty important.
Yes.
Pretty important aspect of the whole show.
And then by the end of the season, they're like in love.
Right.
So it's like it comes a long way.
Yeah.
The second season, without giving too much away, it really like digs into that whole idea of like. It's such an escape fantasy to think like we like those kinds of shows and movies because it's like, oh, they got to get out. They got to get away. Like they're doing crazy things. These young kids, you know.
Yeah.
And like that's such a fun fantasy to buy into. Mm-hmm. I think season two kind of brings you back to reality and it's like, but what happens? Like you're going to have to go home.
Yeah.
What happens when you go home? And especially for Jessica Barden's character.
Alyssa.
Alyssa! she deals with a lot. And I think I appreciated it the second season because it did dive into, like, this poor girl has been through so much. Her story doesn't just end, like, on a beach. You know what I mean? Like, she's got to deal with a lot of stuff. And I think they do a good job, like, justifying it for that reason.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, it's not as fun. Like, because it's not, like, two kids, like, on a crime spree. Of course it's not going to be as fun.
Right.
But
episode in the first season where they meet the boy who works in the gas station, Frodo.
Yes!
Good. I love that.
But I will say that there is a new character played by Naomi Aki who is going to be in
Star Wars
movie.
Yes.
She is fantastic.
Okay.
She is such a psycho.
Yeah.
And she just does such a good job. It kind of gives me like Lupita Nyong'o vibes from Us.
That's good.
Yeah. So just for her, it's interesting. And like to see like what happens with Alyssa, I think is interesting enough. So you'll be happy.
Okay.
It's good.
I'll have to watch it. I don't know when.
There's the tagline.
Right.
You'll be happy.
It's good. Yeah. Fair enough. All right, guys, if you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. We've got links to everything below this episode.
And until next time, Destiny is all bitches.